15. The third disinformation operation, the Soviet-Albanian dispute and split. The overt picture of Soviet-Albanian relations. Esoteric evidence indicated to Western observers of the communist scene that disagreements between the Soviet and Chinese and Albanian party leaders had developed by 1959 into a serious cleavage on policy issues. In 1960, the dispute came out into the open, the first international communist confrontation where the Sino-Soviet dispute and Albanian support for China publicly emerged was at the June 5, 1960. Meeting in Peking of the General Council of the World Federation of Trade Unions. One according to evidence published in the Western Time after the event, there were furious polemics, mainly between the Soviets on the one side and the Chinese and Albanians on the other, at the closed sessions of the Romanian Party Congress in June 1960 and the 81 Party Congress in Moscow in November 1960. The dispute acquired the status of a split when Khrushchev denounced the Albanian leaders publicly at the 22nd CPSU Congress in October 1961 for their criticisms of the Soviet party program, for their dogmatic Stalinism, and for their rejection of peaceful coexistence. Chou Enlai, the leader of the Chinese delegation, withdrew from the Congress as an apparent gesture of support for the Albanian position. Hoxha, while expressing through the Albanian party press his party's continuing solidarity with the CPSU, responded to the Soviet attack with bitter criticism of Khrushchev and his group for their public attack on the Albanian party and for their revisionism. He said that they had betrayed Leninism, that they were restoring capitalism in the Soviet Union, that they were conducting an opportunistic policy of concessions to, in cooperation with, imperialism, and that they were conspiring with the leading revisionist, Tito. A break in Soviet-Albanian diplomatic relations followed in December 1961, and from 1962 onward Albania refused to attend Warsaw Pact and Comecon meetings. Chinese support for and alignment with the Albanian position against the Soviets can be traced back at least to 1959 and possibly even earlier in the esoteric evidence. Inside information and its interpretation. The author's information contradicts this generally accepted version of the development of Soviet-Albanian relations between 1959 and 1962. Briefly, this information was to the effect that relations between all the communist states, including Albania and China, had been normalized by the end of 1957. That the Soviets had successfully mediated in the secret reconciliation of the Yugoslav and Albanian leaders in 1957-58, and that, from late 1959. The KGB's disinformation department was actively collaborating with the Central Committee's Department of Active Operations and with the Yugoslav and Albanian security services in joint disinformation operations. The effect of Shelepin's instructions was to make Albania a party to a triangular disinformation operation with the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia. An ingenious method of turning to the advantage of the bloc's long-range policy the earlier genuine disputes and difficulties in relations between the three countries. The strategic considerations the bloc leaders would have had in mind when planning this operation would probably have been both internal and external. Internally, both the Yugoslav and Albanian regimes would have faced major political problems if the radical step of immediately and publicly normalizing their relations had been taken by those same leaders under whom the hostilities between the parties had originated and developed. In the case of Yugoslavia, it was predictable that public reconciliation would have carried with it a grave risk of factionalism within the Yugoslav party because of the strength of feeling against Albania that had built up in the Stalin period. For the Albanian leaders, the problems would have been even more acute. They were the same leaders who had been responsible for executing their own Albanian colleagues, including the former minister Kosicek, for their pre-Yugoslav sympathies. Open reconciliation with Yugoslavia might well have released pressure for the posthumous rehabilitation of Zex and his friends and for an admission by the leadership that they had committed crimes against loyal and innocent fellow countrymen on Stalin's orders. In other words, there might have been a popular and inter-party reaction in Albania similar to that in Hungary, which accompanied the rehabilitation of the former minister, Laszlo Rajk, in 1956. Furthermore, for strategic reasons, Yugoslavia's true role as an active participant in the formulation and execution of long-range bloc policy had to be kept a closely guarded secret known only to the inner circle of Albanian party leaders. An open Yugoslav-Albanian reconciliation could not have been fully explained to the Albanian rank and file and might well have led to a revival of genuine revisionism in the party. a disinformation operation to which both the Yugoslav and Albanian leaders were parties, offered substantial advantages by providing scope for intimate secret collaboration between the party leaders in an operation of importance to the whole bloc, while at the same time providing a means of delaying open acknowledgement of their secret reconciliation to the party rank and file and to the populations at large. In the Soviet Union, Khrushchev had been enlightened enough to see that the best way to solve the problem of genuine dissent from an opposition to the regime among intellectuals and victims of Stalin's persecution was to involve them actively in one or another aspect of the new long-range policy. The same principle could be applied to healing splits in the bloc and preventing their recurrence. For this reason, Yugoslavia was allowed to contribute significantly to the formulation of the long-range policy and was given an important role to play in its execution. The inclusion of the Albanian leaders was the logical next step. They too could be actively involved in, and committed to, the new policy. A disinformation operation embracing a calculated, spurious dispute with the Soviet Union gave them the opportunity to project themselves to their own people and to enhance their own and their party's prestige as an independent national force robust enough to stand up to Khrushchev's bullying interference in their affairs. In addition, they were given a chance to play a strategic role in a disinformation operation to misrepresent relations between members of the bloc, and especially those between the Soviet Union and China, as degenerating into a state of rivalry and hostility. The object of the misrepresentation being to widen the openings for the bloc countries to develop their political strategies vis-à-vis the non-common, given Albania's past alignment with Stalin and the genuine Tito-Stalin split in Western knowledge of that alignment, it would have seemed logical and convincing to make Albania a Stalinist country in partnership with the Chinese in a calculated and controlled dispute with the Soviets. It also served as a useful preliminary move toward a more open and official Soviet-Yugoslav alignment from 1961 onward, in apparent opposition to the Sino-Albanian partnership. The realignment of Yugoslavia with the Soviet Union after 1961 would be less likely to prejudice her independent image and her political and economic relationships with the advanced and developing countries if the Soviets themselves were to be seen by those countries as revisionists in comparison with the militant Chinese dogmatists. The fact that Albania was the smallest and most isolated of the communist countries made her a particularly suitable choice to be the first full member of the bloc to split away from the Soviet Union after 1958. The Soviet-Albanian split should in fact be regarded as a pilot project for the much more significant Sino-Soviet split, which must already have been in the preliminary stages of development. It gave the bloc strategists an opportunity to test the validity of their disinformation concepts and techniques and to examine the internal and external consequences of a spurious minor split before committing themselves finally to a spurious major split between the Soviet Union and China. If the West were to see through the Soviet-Albanian split, the minimum of political and strategic damage to the bloc would have been done. If, on the other hand, the West were to be successfully taken in by it, if there were no uncontrollable repercussions of the split elsewhere in the bloc, if it proved possible to arrange for the political and economic survival of the Albanian regime, and if the West concluded from the Soviet-Albanian split that the 81-party Congress in November 1960 was indeed a watershed in the disintegration of the communist monolith rather than the reverse, then there would be every justification for moving ahead with the Sino-Soviet split, to the credibility of which the Soviet-Albanian split would have made its contribution. The Sino-Soviet split would help to build up the moderate image of both the Soviet Union and Yugoslavia in the 1960s, to the advantage of their strategic political rapprochement with the advanced and developing countries. The last, but not the least significant, of the reasons for bringing the Soviet-Albanian dispute out into the open as a split would have been to provide the West with confirmation of the reliability of information on intra-bloc relations derived from esoteric evidence, from retrospective leakages, from articles in the communist press, and from secret Western intelligence sources. Anomalies in the dispute and split. Detailed examination of the origins and development of the Soviet-Albanian dispute and split, using the new methodology, brings to light a number of additional points casting doubt on the authenticity of the differences between them and confirming that the dispute was manufactured in the interest of long-range policy. According to the esoteric evidence, the Soviet-Albanian dispute began in the very period during which the long-range policy was being formulated. Hoxha himself and other Albanian leaders participated in the process. In January-February 1959, Hoxha led the Albanian delegation to the 21st CPSU Congress, which discussed the roughly simultaneous transition to communism in all the countries of the bloc. This entailed an attempt to level up the economics of the more backward communist countries, including Albania, at the expense of the more advanced countries, including the Soviet Union. In May 1959, an official Chinese delegation, which included Chiang Wen-tian, the Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, formerly a Comintern official and Chinese ambassador in Moscow, and Ping Teihui, the Minister of Defense, visited Tirana. Their visit coincided with the visit of a Soviet delegation, headed by Khrushchev, that included Marshal Malinovsky, the Soviet Minister of Defense. It is generally supposed in the West either that meetings were held in an unsuccessful attempt to iron out the differences between the three countries, or that the opportunity was taken by Ping and Chiang to conspire with Khrushchev against Mao. The reception Hoxha gave the delegations, the course of the negotiations, and the official communique issued after the meeting provided clear evidence that there were no differences between them and that their relations were extremely close. Bearing in mind also that these high-level meetings in Tirana took place at the same time as the joint Soviet-Yugoslav disinformation operation was being launched, it is more likely that the leaders discussed the development of the Albanian disinformation operation than that they discussed differences between them for which there were no solid grounds. In the same month of May 1959, Comecon met in Tirana. The fact that the Soviet delegation was headed by Kosygin, then chief of the Soviet Planning Commission, indicates the importance of the session and gives weight to the supposition that it dealt with long-range economic planning. Despite the esoteric evidence of a Soviet-Albanian dispute, the Albanians continued to participate in both Comecon and Warsaw Pact Organization meetings in 1960 and 1961 up to, and including the plenary session of Comecon in Moscow in September 1961, the month before Khrushchev's first public attack on them. Most significant of all, Hoxha was among the signatories of the Manifesto of the 81 Party Congress in November 1960. In a special resolution approving the participation of Albania in the Congress, the Albanian party stated that the CPC was the most experienced and competent body of the international communist movement, and added that the hopes of the imperialists, headed by the USA, to split the communist camp are doomed to failure. Hoxha's official report to the Fourth Congress of the Albanian Party, published on February 14, 1961, attacked the US and NATO and was replete with praise for the Soviet Union, China, and the decisions of the 81 Party Congress. It acknowledged the general collaboration between Albania and the Soviet Union. The esoteric evidence of a Soviet-Albanian dispute between 1959 and 1961, relying mainly on a detailed comparison of the Soviet, Albanian, and Chinese press during these years, was developed in the West. From this comparison, different approaches by the different parties to certain issues could indeed be deduced. At the same time, it should be remembered that none but a privileged few in either the Soviet Union or Albania were able to obtain and read the press of the other country and make the sort of comparison which is the stock in trade of Western analysts. Given the existence of a disinformation program, the clear implication is that much of the esoteric evidence was specifically directed at Western analysts and was not intended for domestic consumption. Nevertheless, Khrushchev's public attack on the Albanians at the 22nd CPSU Congress in October 1961 seemed to most observers to confirm that the esoteric evidence had all along reflected a genuine dispute. It is interesting to note, however, that press coverage of the exchanges between Khrushchev and Hoxha varied widely in the bloc. The Soviet press did not name China or give any indications of Chinese support for Albania. Some East European party leaders openly criticized Chinese support for Hoxha's position. The Chinese press refrained from editorial comment on the Kremlin but printed the Albanian attacks on Khrushchev. Press coverage of the dispute was incomplete throughout the bloc. Some documents and speeches were not published, even by the Soviets or the Albanians. In contrast, official information on Albanian attendance between 1958 and 1961 at Comecon and Warsaw Pact meetings, at the 21st CPSU Congress, and at the 81 Party Congress was published at the time in the press of every communist country. Commitments by communist parties to the decisions of multilateral meetings are taken extremely seriously. The point applies as much to the Albanian commitment to the manifesto of the 81 Party Congress as to any other. The day-to-day official evidence of continuing Albanian cooperation with the rest of the bloc in the years 1958 to 1961 should be considered as reflecting far more accurately the true state of affairs than the esoteric, unofficial, incomplete, and retrospective evidence from communist sources pointing to a dispute. Comparison with the Tito-Stalin split. In the case of the genuine Tito-Stalin split in 1948 and the continuing Soviet-Yugoslav differences in 1956 and early 1957, confidential briefings and guidance on the subject were given to CPSU members. The author was a CPSU member in good standing until his break with the Soviet regime in December 1961. He received no such party briefing on the state of Soviet-Albanian relations. Tito and other leading Yugoslavs could not and did not visit Moscow during the Tito-Stalin split, but Hoxha and other Albanians had no fears of visiting Moscow as late as November 1960. Even Khrushchev's attack on Hoxha in October 1961, which might have been expected to have the most serious consequences, did not prevent an Albanian delegation from attending the Fifth World Congress of the WFTU in Moscow in the following December, the month in which Soviet-Albanian diplomatic relations were broken off. In contrast with the Tito-Stalin split, there was no formal condemnation of Albania by any bloc or international communist meeting or conference. There was no systematic, overall communist bloc boycott of Albania, ideologically, politically, economically, or diplomatically, despite attacks and critical comments by individual parties or their leaders. These cannot be considered as binding on the communist movement as a whole or as overriding in importance the common obligations and commitments made at the International Communist Conferences in 1957 and 1960. Only the Soviet Union broke off diplomatic relations with Albania. Even in this case, the circumstances were peculiar, in that the note to the Albanians was delivered by the Soviet Deputy Foreign Minister, Firi Ubin, a former ambassador to Yugoslavia who was responsible at the time in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs for relations with the non-aligned countries, not with other communist countries in the bloc. The use of Firi Ubin for this purpose suggested that the breach had more to do with bloc strategic interests in the outside world than with intra-bloc relations. Although the other East European countries withdrew their ambassadors, they did not break relations. Even Yugoslavia retained a diplomatic mission in Tirana. Although Albania ceased, by its own account, to attend Warsaw Pact and Comecon meetings in 1962 and claimed to have terminated its membership in both organizations, neither took formal action to expel Albania, which therefore retains its de jure membership. The Soviet-Albanian Friendship Society survived the split. Its board meeting in Moscow on January 9, 1981, celebrated the 35th anniversary of the Albanian People's Republic. No economic pressure was brought to bear on Albania by the rest of the bloc. Albanian trade representatives stayed on in Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and Hungary despite criticism of Albania by the party leaders in those countries. In 1962, Poland, Hungary, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, and East Germany all signed trade agreements with Albania. After the split, as before, 90% of Albania's trade was with other communist countries. The main difference was that China replaced the Soviet Union as Albania's principal supplier. So smooth was the transition that it might well have been jointly planned by the Soviets, Chinese, and Albanians in advance. Conclusion: Western interest in splits in the communist world is understandable. The potential benefits of genuine splits would be enormous. Moreover, the esoteric evidence on which so much Western analysis is based was genuinely valid so long as Stalin was alive. But the failure to understand the changes that took place in the 7 years after his death, especially the reintroduction of strategic disinformation, has rendered the old methodology acutely vulnerable. So intense is the interest in actual and potential splits that conflicting evidence is undervalued or ignored. For example, few, if any, commentators have remarked on the continuing high level of Albanian trade with Eastern Europe, despite the fact that Eastern Europe aligned itself with the Soviet Union against Albania and China. The same bias is evident in the analysis of communist documents. The passages containing mutual criticism are exhaustively discussed. Those expressing solidarity are ignored. But Hoxha was not just uttering empty phrases when he reported to the Fourth Congress of his party in February 1961 that friendship with the Soviet Union has been, is, and will always remain the cornerstone of the foreign policy of the new Albania. Stormy applause, ovations. This friendship is expressed and tempered every day by the fraternal relations and general collaboration between our two countries. If all the evidence given above is weighed objectively, it leads to the inescapable conclusion that, in this instance, Hoxha was telling the truth and that the Soviet-Albanian dispute and split were, and are, no more than the products of bloc disinformation. Objectives of the disinformation operation. The objectives of this disinformation were to avoid the adverse internal consequences of an open reconciliation between the Albanian and Yugoslav leaders, enhance the prestige of the Albanian leaders and their parties in the eyes of their own people as an independent national force, support the projection of Yugoslav revisionism as a Trojan horse within the communist bloc, suggest that, after 1961, Khrushchev himself was under revisionist influence, and thus to build up his image as a moderate in contrast to the militant Chinese and Albanian Stalinists, confirm that efforts to unite the communist bloc and movement at the 81 Party Congress in November 1960 had failed, and that the bloc and movement were disintegrating over the unresolved issues of Stalinism, revisionism, national communism, and the pursuit of conflicting national interests. Test reactions inside and outside the bloc to a minor split before the further development of the nascent Sino-Soviet dispute.